When last we left our hero, our heroine, was in Sydney, Australia, and her name is Kate Toon, and she was telling us all about how she's taking, well, let's talk specifically about one thing that a lot of solopreneurs have very big concerns about, and that is, I bill by the hour, I have an inventory of hours, I don't want to work over that, maybe plus or minus 10%, 20% sometimes, but that's my inventory. And maybe that's not enough for what I want to do with my life. What can I do to increase my inventory? I mean, my first reaction to that would be, number one, add another SKU to your shelf. Here in the United States, we have SKUs, shelf keeping units that describe products. So you talk to a product guy and they'll say, how many SKUs do you have in your store? And it might be, oh, we got 15,000 SKUs. Well, that's a pretty big store there, Mort. Well, anyway, so how many SKUs do you have? If all you have is hours, that's one SKU. That's one product. My suggestion would be, hey, let's look for different SKUs. Let's look for different products you can put in inventory. Like, again, Kate Toon, you've got Confessions of a Misfit Entrepreneur. You've got your kids' book. You've got your clever copywriting school. You've got your clever copywriting conference. Is that the same thing as CopyCon?
Yeah, same thing. So, and the school has got a membership and shops and a directory and also a podcast. And then I have the Recipe for SEO Success, which is a big e-course, but there's also four mini courses. There's a shop. And now there's a monthly membership for that as well. And yes, the book. And then also I do workshops as well. So I, you know, we'll do like a little workshop on how to write a sales page or blah, 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 blah. And I do speaking as well and sometimes get paid. So I've got a lot of SKUs. Mort would be very impressed with my SKU level. And it works because it means that my big course, which I run three times a year, which I just sold out yesterday. I mean, that's big money. You know, it's an expensive course. I take about 70 people each round, 75. It's a big blob of money. And then throughout the weeks, I'm selling little things, you know, not high value. You know, it's price them low, stack them high, like a $20 template or a $10 book. And those just trickle in each day without me really thinking about it. And that, it's pretty good. It took me a while to build, though, I must say.
Well, I want to talk to you about that because your empire, and again, if you go to katetoon.com, you can poke around her empire and discover, holy crap, this woman has a ton on the ball. What did you start with? What was your number one SKU after you figured out that, boy, getting paid an hour to write an hour a copy, that's not going to keep me fed and happy for very long. I mean, what was that first SKU outside of that?
Well, I think the first thing, which is still in the hourly thing, was to productize my copywriting. So I really honed in on the high-value jobs that had high perceived value, but that didn't take me a huge amount of time. So for me, that was SEO copy for websites, 5, 10, 20-page websites, because it's quite formulaic. And if you get into a role, you can write them quite quickly, yet they have a high perceived value. Unlike blog posts, for example, which no one's willing to pay any money for, but they actually take quite a long time. So that was my first step. And then I realized that there was value as well in doing consultations, which doesn't still is hours for time, but I was able to charge a lot more. Like if you're willing to talk to someone for an hour, it's more valuable to them than doing an hour of copywriting. So maybe you can charge $400 for an hour's consult, where maybe you could only charge $100 for an hour of copywriting. So try to really maximize my hours first. And then I moved into the passive income. And the first thing I sold was my copy deck, which is like a Word document that I use to write, you know, whatever it may be, a website or whatever. And it's just a well put together, clean Word document with fonts and guidelines and tips. It kind of paint by numbers. And copywriters were always asking me about it because I wrote blogs about it and saying, can I get a copy? Like, what does it look like? And I was giving it away. And then I thought, yeah, I could charge for this. Like, I'll charge $15 to buy my copy deck. And today, I think I've sold about 3,000 of those. You know, and it wasn't rocket science. It was something I was using every day. But for someone else who's never been a copywriter, who's never worked in agencies, who doesn't understand SEO, it's invaluable. The amount of time that's going to save someone. So that was my first product.
No, that's interesting. And this goes back to what everybody who may be listening should really be thinking about and understand. If you've been doing what you do for anything more than 5 years, you've got valuable stuff that people will want to tap into. And ideally, it's in a form that you can make money from. or it's certainly something that you have expertise to share about that can further boost and enhance your personal brand. Like, exactly. I love to talk to people that are like CPAs, certified public accountants, or lawyers here in the United States. And I love to tell them, if you have something at the end of your name, like a CPA or an MBA or a JD, all these acronym things, I love to tell them, hey, dude, that's just table stakes. That gets you in the game. That does not make you a winner of that game. I mean, yeah, you're a lawyer, but you're as good as the worst lawyer in that barrel. So what are you going to do to get yourself out of that barrel? And my answer is always work on branding yourself as a person, as an expert, as a thought leader within your area. And if you're a lawyer, do exactly what Kate's doing, which is I'm not just a copywriter. I'm an SEO copywriter.
Yeah.
Because that's my sweet spot and the reason you should talk to me.
And this is it. People pay more for specialists, don't they? You go and see your local doctor. You know, I don't know how it works in America. You probably have to sell a car to see your doctor or something in America.
Yeah, basically, yes.
But then you want to see a brain surgeon. You're happy to sell two cars, you know. So as soon as you specialize and say, yeah, you know, I'm not just a workaday copywriter. I'm an expert at this particular type of thing. And you become known for it. It really is powerful. And people respect it more, I think. And people worry, I think, that if they niche down or they specialize, they're not going to be able to get the regular everyday clients. But I think you still can. I think you're like, yep, I still do that. But if you need an expert in this, I'm your person. So I think it's important.
Well, an example that I have a friend who's a lawyer, and she is very specifically chosen to be a copyright lawyer, you know, to make sure that things are trademarked appropriately and things like that. You would think that narrows things down for her quite a bit. And yeah, it does. So that if someone has a product that needs to be trademarked, not only in the United States, but in Canada and the European zone and Australia and New Zealand, et cetera, they need someone to talk to. And she may not do the entire globe, but she is the point of access for someone who may need much more. Consequently, she's the expert that can engage other people as needed. And that provides incredible value and makes her a valued referral, as opposed to I'm a lawyer.
Yeah. And I love what you've said there as well, because I think something that's happened for me as my personal brand has evolved is that, yes, I am kind of the go-to person, but there's only so much I can do. So then I pass my referrals and my work on to other people, and then you become their go-to person, and you create this little network of love and relationships. And, you know, it sounds woo-woo, but it all kind of comes back to you because you're kind of spreading your goodness around, you know? So I love that idea of referring on work as well.
And I really feel that way too, which is I tend to be a natural born cynic. You know, someone once told me, you know what a cynic is, don't you? A cynic is a disappointed romantic. And I went, ah, that's exactly it. Which, yeah, but it's true. You know, a romantic sees what the world should be. A cynic knows it'll never be that way though. Oh. And it's so true, which is why I'm going to go weep and watch Love Actually or something like that later tonight. But my point is that I'm not naturally social media oriented when it comes to the getting out there and sharing and all that stuff. Why? Because I see a lot of people who are sharing garbage. I referred to it in the last episode as that bland porridge, that bumper sticker saying, that kind of, I'm a guru because I've read all the gurus and this is what all the gurus are saying. The thing I really love about Kate is that there is no mistaking a Kate Toon quote, because it slaps you upside the face like a cold fish in the morning. And you go, oh yeah, that's Kate. You know, because it's got your flavor. It's got your style all over it. You are so powerful in your presence and in person and online and on social media and everything else. And
stop it. I love it.
But my point is, I bet you had a little bit of trepidation when you started really letting your hair down and letting it go, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because especially, you know, a couple of years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, I was, you know, kind of trying to make my mark in SEO, kind of pivoting away from copywriting a little, trying to really hone in on that specialism as we've talked about. And, you know, I was joining forums and groups, and often I would be one of the only women in those groups as well. So immediately, like, there's a focus on you because it's unusual, and any question you asked would get a lot of attention, both negative and positive. Like, why are you asking such a dumb question, you know, from some people, and then really over answering from other people? Because, you know, maybe the guys in the group didn't want to ask questions because they would actually then show that they didn't know everything. But I was like, hey, I don't know everything and I want to learn, and you're all clever. So if you're willing to answer me, hey, I'm going to take it. So that was challenging. And in the first couple of years, I did get a lot of backlash and kind of nasty comments. And it, you know, I'll be honest, it did impact me and kind of make me take a bit of a step back. But then I just shook it off and I'm like, well, you're the fools, really. You're the fools. If you can't kind of be open and honest about what you do and don't know, that's just a real, I don't know, it's a terrible way to be. You're going to be defending yourself forever. And, you know, when I go up on stage and when I'm talking, there's always that thing where someone's going to put their hand up and say, you don't know what you're talking about. Or ask you a question that you generally don't know the answer to. And my response is always going to be, put my hands up. Yeah, I don't know everything. Great point. Thank you so much for sharing. That's brilliant. You've really made my day. You know, and it's disarming. And I've lost the point of the question now. But yes, it was scary in the beginning. And it's still a bit scary now. I still get people sending me odd emails saying, someone sent me an email a little while ago saying, I'm leaving your newsletter because of your potty mouth, which I thought was very amusing. And I loved it. I kept it, took screenshot it, shared it on social media.
This episode of the Nonfiction Brand Podcast is brought to you by Nonfiction Brandversity. It's a free Facebook group dedicated to the art and craft of personal branding. And we'd like to invite you. Just search Nonfiction Brandversity on Facebook and ask to join. You're in, guaranteed. I can't wait to see you on campus. And people should know that if you talk to Kate, she's just this side of a sailor when it comes to her use of language with all flavors.
I'm not bad,
but if there is a not safe for work, NSFW, in your case, it's NSFW, not safe for wimps, which is if you can't.
Oh, I like that. You're on fire today, man.
Oh, you know it, baby. No, but it's true. I mean, if you can't handle the heat, I get that, man. Move along. Go find some boring person. You know, exactly. Like Gary Vaynerchuk, who everybody knows, Gary V. That guy, he's like a double-barreled shotgun in your face every video he does. And some people hate him because of that. I personally find him a little too much now and then. But I'll always find myself checking in to see what he's doing, because one thing is, he is not boring.
Yes.
In a world where most people are boring as sin, and a very boring sin at that, I just can't stand it. So I love people who have flavor, who have a point of view and aren't afraid to share it, as long as there's a smile on their face saying, you really understand that what I'm saying, I don't necessarily believe or could be talked out of. Let's just have a conversation. Let's see where this goes.
Yeah, I think you can be too strident. I think you can be like condescending. And I also think there's some topics I would never talk about. I'd never get into religion. I don't really talk too much about politics. And, you know, I keep it fairly business and I keep it fairly life and reality and parenting and things like that. So I think you have to be relatively careful. I don't just spill my guts. It's all, I think, you know, often I'll put a post up and I will get messages from people going, oh my God, are you okay? And it's like, yeah, you know, it's an artful post that I wrote 3 weeks ago that I mean, it's genuine and it's real, but not every single thing that I'm sharing is 100%. I don't know if the word true is the right thing, but 100% me right now. Do you know what I mean? And it's a curated version. It's creative. It's copywriting. It's writing. So there's me in it. But is it 100% me? Maybe 95%, you know?
Well, and there's a little bit of hyperbole sometimes.
Yes,
there's a little bit of
creative license.
Like if I'm having a bad day, I might make it a tragic day.
Exactly. That's
just because
point.
It makes for a better story. And by
and
the
it
way,
makes it funnier, you know, and maybe you tie two little stories together that maybe happened on different days, but you put them together and it's boom, it's much better. So there's some creative license there. And that's the copywriter in me, I guess. That's the writer in me. I do enjoy crafting the story. The story is true, but there's a bit of craft to it as well.
I don't think I told you this, but when we met in San Diego at Social Media Marketing World, I met a bunch of Australians. And by the way, if you want to have a good time bar plus Australian equals hello, having a blast. And let me tell you, the introvert in me was just about ready to leave the bar when Todd Austin of Fletch Digital in Sydney sat down at the bar next to me. I heard his voice as he's ordering. And I said, hey, you're not from around here. And 4 hours later, you know, we're having a great time and all that. By the way, that's what happens when you show up and you are there. That could not have happened had I hid out in my hotel room. But one of the Australians I met, who shall remain nameless, just because I think she might be a little embarrassed because I'm talking to you about this, we were talking and having a great time and all that stuff. And I don't know, the conversation or the pot of people kind of mixed and you moved to talk to somebody else. And this woman said, you know who that is, don't you? And I'm like, no, Kate Toon, I just met her. She, no, she's huge in copywriting in Australia. And I'm like, oh, that's cool, because I'm a copywriter. And, you know, we had a great conversation. She said, no, you don't understand. I took her course. And the night before it, I was so nervous. I broke out in hives all over my body because I was going to meet the Kate Toon. Talk about building a personal brand when you can scare the crap out of people.
I don't know why. I was at a conference just 2 weeks ago and a lady came up towards me with another lady and said, you're Kate Toon, aren't you? And she said, yeah. And she said, I feel like I'm going to start crying. And I was like, why? And then I hugged her and that did make her start crying. And then we had photos together and I was like, I'm just normal. Like, I can see how people might react to like Marie Folio or Amy Porterfield or something like that because they're huge, or Oprah Winfrey, or, you know, but I've got like 5,000 followers on Facebook. I'm nobody. Do you know what I mean? But it just shows that it's not about the size of your audience. It's about the connection that you make with them. And I think a lot of people, they've read my book, they've listened to countless hours of my podcast, they've watched my video, they've done my courses. There is an intimate connection there, you know, and I am quite forthcoming and I do share a lot of myself. So people do feel like they really know me. And then when I do meet people, I'm quite friendly as well. So it's like the double whammy. Because sometimes I'm sure you've had it. You meet these people, these heroes, and they're just, there's nothing there. There's nothing there. And it's like, oh my God, you're nothing like your the personal brand that you created. Have you had that happen?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm thinking back and going, oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That there were people that come off very personable, that come off like, oh, I would love to have a beer with that person and things like that. And then you meet them and understand, well, there are a couple of different types. One is, are you paying me? Okay, you're not. Yes. I have no time for you.
That one. That's the one I meet.
Oh my God, I hate those people. Versus the other ones who are like, they won't leave until everyone's gotten whatever they want. They want an autograph on the book that they brought. I mean, think about that. You come to a conference and you bring your hard copy book just to get the signature from the person who wrote the book because the book meant something to you. And you find out the guy's a bit of a pompous ass. Mm. Oh my God, that's such a letdown. And when it comes to personal branding, the best thing I can ever hear is you are exactly like you sound like on the podcast, or I can hear your voice when you write. You know, I now read what you write and I hear your voice.
I love that. People say that to me and they say that they get Toonisms because I quite like making words up and putting odd words together. And people say, oh, that's such a Toonism. And when that for me is the highest, highest compliment, when someone starts to use your phrases that you've made up in their writing, it's like, yes, it's working.
I think that's an indication of just how effectively you've personally branded yourself because you've obviously linked it to your authentic self. And you have found a way to communicate your authentic self via things like Toonisms or via your style of writing, your vocal tone, your sense of humor, all of those things. I was at a thing this past week with a friend of mine, and I can't remember what we were talking about, but I was kind of doing the check, the kind of teeth check personality-wise, like, do I have anything in my teeth? I think it was I was asking some questions at someone else's presentation. And I always worry about coming off like the kid who's always got his hand in the air and always the one who's like, ooh, pick him, you know? Yeah, exactly. So I'll check with the friends I went with or that I met there and say, was I being too obnoxious? Because sometimes I don't know. And she said, no, you're always on brand. And I'm like, oh, I love that.
Oh.
Well, she, because she knows me really well. She knows what I'm doing. She's a member of Nonfiction Brandversity and shall remain nameless. And, but she gets what I'm doing, which is I don't want to be fake. I really do not want to be fake.
Yeah.
I do want to get my name out there. I do want to share what I have to offer, but I want to do it in a way that comes off as human first. How do you avoid, especially with all the funnels? Because I know you're not a funnel-oriented person, but you've got your sales funnels and all that stuff set up pretty darn smart. How do you make sure that your funnel never takes over your message?
I think my funnel's a very messy funnel and it kind of developed over time. So I've never done a funnel course or anything like that. And there's lots of human connection points along the way because it's not just a series of emails and a webinar. Like most things, I try and get people to join my Facebook group, like your Brandversity group. I have a couple of groups on Facebook. And that's where the work is done. It's not going to be done in an email. No matter how beautifully that email is written, that email series, upgrading people with witty quotes and whatever, the work is done for me in the Facebook group because that's where I turn up consistently each day and share my stuff, good or bad, in my voice, whatever. So I feel that once people are in the group, that's when they're going to be my people. And that's where the humanness comes through. The rest, the marketing, it happens. I don't really check on it. I don't really look at conversion rates and click-throughs or whatever. It's just going on. I focus on what I can control, which is my turning up. And I am a real believer in being consistently just turning up. Even on the days when you're not feeling too great, just turn up a tiny little bit. But a lot of people, I think, who fail with this whole personal branding thing is because they do it for a couple of weeks and they like share the quotes and do a couple of Facebook lives. And then they're like, I'm not getting an immediate reaction or I'm getting busy with something else. I'm going to stop. I'm going to stop putting myself out there. And it just doesn't work. I think it takes a long time to build up a personal brand, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I was just at something this past week doing an on-camera interview. And I'm talking to the person who was putting the video together on their social media team. And she asked me how many times I had been presenting there, et cetera, et cetera. And then she said, well, you know how I first met you. And I said, I don't remember meeting you. Sorry about that. And she said, no. You wrote this great blog post about what it was like to come to Dream Bank and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, that was like the third post I did when I decided to get really active on this. And I think if I look on LinkedIn, maybe 23 people have read it. Well, she was one of them.
Wow.
And I'm finding out a year and a half later that she was like, oh my God, put this guy on my radar in a major way. And I'm like, damn, I got to be writing some more of those LinkedIn articles because maybe not a lot of people see them. But again, a lot of people don't matter if the one person who does read it says, I want you on my team. I want you in my tribe. I want to buy what you have to sell. I want to be engaged with you in some way.
I've got a little quick story on that as well that I wrote a post years and years ago about an accounting software. I won't name it because we're not giving them free advertising. But I wrote a silly post about how this software saved my marriage. Wasn't affiliated, didn't get anything. They loved it. They tweeted it a few times, forgot about it. Then I launched my copywriting conference and I'm looking for a sponsor. We randomly approach this accounting company. And the woman who is now the head of marketing at the accounting company read that post 6 years ago, loved it. And as soon as we got in touch, she said, oh my God, you're the one who wrote the article. I loved it. Yeah, we'd be keen. And they were then the sponsor of CopyCon. So you just don't know all these little things. They're all, I don't know. Well, it all works out.
And that's what I like to tell people is, you aren't going to know what hits, but I can guarantee you one thing for absolute certain. If you aren't doing it, you will get nothing.
Yeah.
Well, we're coming to the end of this episode. I want to ask you a question about how our American-based nonfiction branders can engage with you more directly. You mentioned some Facebook groups. Are any of them free? Can we invade them? Can we do an
American
invasion?
I would love you to come and invade them. I've got a big thing about Americans. My only problem with American people is when I start talking to them, I like to try and mimic their accents. So that's my only problem, especially Californians. I have a group called I Love SEO, which you can join, and I will make you love SEO. Okay. And I have a group called Misfit Entrepreneurs, which is very silly. It's supposed to be a business group, but it's just a little bit absurd most of the time. And all Americans are welcome.
Well, nonfiction branders and nonfiction brand podcast listeners, I encourage you to engage with Kate. She's at katetoon.com, Kate with a K, Toon with two O's. So it's like Kate Toon, but cartoon, cartoon, Kate Toon.
That's it. Yeah.
KateToon.com. Very cool. You're going to be hearing more from her as she's going to be part of our rotational guest series. And, you know, unfortunately, when I get someone in my orbit, I'm like Jupiter. I've got such mass that they can't escape the gravitational pull.
I don't want to escape. I love it. I love it. You know, as you said, you can't meet amazing people unless you turn up. You were the highlight of social media marketing world for me. And look what's happened since then. We've done so many things and hopefully many more in the future.
I know. And one of the things I would like to ask you on record as we record, I would love for you to do a mini masterclass for Nonfiction Brandversity sometime. That would be a live Facebook where...
I'd love to do that.
Yeah, where we just talk about whatever you want to talk about and let me know ahead of time and we'll pump it like crazy and we'll get as many nonfiction branders there as possible. Because let me tell you, the thing I've learned is if you can make meaningful connections with people who get what you do and the way you do it, and you love what they do and the way they do what they do, cherish those people. Because most of the time I'm surrounded by people who don't get me.
Yes.
So so this is my way of saying, Kate, I cherish you.
I see you.
I validate you.
You're so American.
Yes. Well, yeah, kind of. Anyway, so great to have Kate Toon on from Sydney, Australia. And we'll have her back on very soon. So keep your eyes out on the Nonfiction Brand Podcast. That's it for now. I'll see you next time.